IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We are headed for a new year, or we are.
It's kind of an interesting week between Christmas and New Year's, you know. You never quite know when Christmas ends, and you know, we have those 7 days in there where things just kind of keep on going.
We sure did. We had about 30 people here last night for a fun celebration for Boxing Day. We are still British at heart. All of us have lived in Britain for a certain amount of time, and so that's the big celebration in England. For the day after Christmas, everybody gathers with their extended family.
And
they
where
pack
did
up
that...
a lunch, a box of lunch, and they go have fun. With
I thought it was because they box up all their stuff that they don't want that they got for Christmas and take it back.
That's pretty much what we did. Oh, well, yeah, take it back or get it eaten, one or the other.
Right.
But it was, we had such a good time.
But we hope you all had a good Christmas, and we hope that you're looking forward to 2025, a quarter of the way into the 21st century.
Can you believe it? Remember the year 2000? You're going to think we're crazy out there. But we had some little Cub Scouts who carried in a ton of food to our place at Bear Lake. We have a crawl space underneath our little place up there. And they carried in wheat and rice and beans and all that because, you know, we...
Food storage. We
kind of thought maybe it might be the end of the world the next day.
Well, yeah, really. You know, Y2K, we just didn't know if the computers would turn over. Remember that? And also that on New Year's Eve that year, we rented a penthouse in a hotel so we could see the new year come in.
Downtown Salt Lake City.
The new millennium come in. And it was so foggy that we couldn't see one foot out of the window.
You couldn't see your hand in front of your
face. But that was 25 years ago.
25 years ago. Can you imagine?
We were young.
We were young. Oh, man, what a world this is.
Hard to remember.
Here we are, diving into 2025.
But you know, honey, speaking of time and the passage of time and the things that change with time is kind of a good lead-in to what we want to talk a little about today. And rather than tell you what it is in advance, let us just tell you a little story. And then we'll tell you where to find more about this story if you're interested, or about the subject that is behind this story. So we're just going to read you a little and comment a little from an article that just appeared today on Friday. It'll be the cover story all weekend at Meridian Magazine, or if you want the actual web address, LatterdaySaintMag.com, and we're going to tie our broadcast in with that today, because this is a really important and interesting subject which doesn't get enough attention.
Well, are you ready? This is called The Babies and the Backstory.
Well, that's the first part of it.
Yes. Our honeymoon was a cross-country drive to Boston to start graduate school. Oh my gosh, those were the days. I was such a relatively new MBA student.
We'll alternate paragraphs. I'll start with this one, okay? So our honeymoon was a cross-country drive to Boston to start graduate school. I was one of the relatively few MBA students at Harvard who was married. And we had our first child on our first anniversary. Being married made me rather unique among those students, and being a father made me almost otherworldly among my classmates. There just weren't many who were married, and even fewer. Maybe you could number them on one hand. Maybe, I don't know. I don't have the numbers. But we'd started our family. And when I happened to mention that Linda and I thought we maybe wanted more than two or three children, I got several sideways glances. And even one anonymous letter slipped under our apartment door that questioned our intention to, quote, use up more than our share of the Earth's resources, end quote.
Well, it was in the 70s, and the criticisms that started in Boston got worse as we moved to Washington, D.C., and had three more kids in the next 5 years. I was stopped at the grocery store and asked where all those children came from. Did we run a school? The standard narrative was that everyone needed to fear the population bomb, and that all enlightened people subscribed to the zero population growth mantra. That was so true. It was so scary to take three kids to the grocery store.
It really was. We were soon called on our LDS mission presidency in London. And we had two more children born during our 3 years there. And, you know, if four kids stood out in Washington, having six kids in England was pretty much unheard of.
But I have to do a little shout out for the British people. They loved children.
Well, we were a curiosity
they
to them.
Loved it. They thought it was so fun.
They did. It was a different reaction than in Boston and in Washington. We were warned, even by fellow church members, that we probably didn't have enough money to raise and educate all those kids, or enough love to give each one as much as they needed. All we knew is that we were approaching the question each time on whether to have another child prayerfully. And we weren't trying to apply any answer or impressions that we felt to anyone but ourselves. We were really, I think it's some of the most intense praying we've ever done. Every single time that we were debating and weighing, is our family complete? Should we have another child? And the answer kept being yes.
Except, well, one time we were so confused because we didn't get an answer. Remember that? And then it turned out that Noah was already on his way.
Now
fast forward 50 years and reflect on today's world, where the current fear and the present narrative has flipped from population bomb to demographic winter, as all 50 states and every developed country in the world has slipped below a replacement level birth rate, and where the future worry is the shrinking workforce and the inverted pyramid, where fewer and fewer working age people are unable to take care of more and more elderly.
And a lot of us have thought a little about that, but perhaps none of us have thought enough about it. But imagine we began talking about how time passes and how we're already a quarter of the way into the 21st century. But it is really just in the last 50 years, maybe even less, maybe 40 years, that the whole narrative has flipped, and that the worry about too many people on the planet and about the population bomb has just turned 180 degrees. And just think about it. Every single developed country on the planet Earth has a birth rate below the replacement level, declining population. It'll take a while for the population to really decline because there's so many people living longer. So the real issue is the balance between those who are being born and taking jobs and growing up and part of the workforce, which is shrinking and will shrink severely in the next little while, except for immigration, which we'll talk about in a minute. But what a change to worry about, oh, we're growing too fast, to worry, and at least in developed countries. It's very different in Africa and in developing countries. But in all of the developed world, all 50 states, including Utah, which was the one state for many years that had a birth rate high enough to maintain the same population without any in-migration. But now all 50 states and all developed countries have a birth rate below 2.1 children per woman, which is the replacement rate. And some are as low or below one. And so their populations are declining rapidly, but for in migration.
Well, China, of course, is in big trouble. They don't have anybody to take care of their elderly. They're
Because of their one-child
bringing people
policy.
in from other countries, like crazy. It's really going to be interesting.
So let's go on here. In our latest round of speaking and travel, particularly in Asia and in Europe, governments have moved 180 degrees from the old overpopulation worries and are now basically panicked enough about declining workforces that they offer all kinds of campaigns and incentives to encourage couples to have children. For example, when we were in Singapore, we learned that new parents get a $10,000 to $15,000 cash baby bonus, quote unquote. And in Sweden, parents receive ongoing monthly payments of about $130 per child. And this is the part that's interesting, an additional large family supplement, quote unquote.
With a large family, meaning more than one child. So, wow, it's getting so scary. We really are in trouble. Of course, the personal questions of having children, if and when and how many, must be answered individually by each couple. But whether we're thinking about it personally or societally, we ought to ask ourselves the right questions.
So let's just really plow into this for a minute. Let us begin the new year by thinking a little about what may be the most important and most overlooked problem facing humanity as we enter the second quarter of the 21st century. We're not talking about climate change or political upheaval or pollution of the planet's water and air or even war and poverty, although obviously these are tremendous challenges. The even larger problem, and the one that may overtake us most quickly, is the existential threat of what some have called a demographic winter. The problem of population declines and shifts, I emphasize shifts, from one part of the earth to others and one culture and one society to the other, that are so severe they could change the lives of everyone on the planet.
This is such a big issue that we can only put a dent in it. And I want to, you wanted to try to do it in two parts with a little feedback from the readers in between. We'd love to talk to you about this personally, but we can't. This first part's going to simply ask questions. As you see, some of the questions about birth rate, fertility, and marriage decline are economic or political or cultural, but many are spiritual questions about which Latter-day Saints should have particular concern. Some are broad, some are personal, and then we just give a chance, you gave a chance for people to comment at the end of this article. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Ayers on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Ayer.
Welcome back to Ayers on the Road. So, next week, in part, we'll say a little bit more about this in part two. We have a commentary on these questions.
But all we're going to do today is read the questions, and we're going to leave you for a week to think about them. And by the way, it's going to be too many to remember. But again, if this subject interests you, and we think it should, you can read these questions at Meridian Magazine this weekend. Just Google Meridian Magazine, you'll come right to it.
I
Our
will remember.
article's the first thing you'll see. But if you want to know the actual web address, it's LatterdaySaintMag.com. So here we go. These are questions that they're an eclectic mix. Some of them are questions you may have heard before because they're demographic or societal questions or statistical questions about population. We've shortened those down so they're not boring or long, but they're intermingled with some spiritual questions because the question of how many babies are being born is an important thing in theology, particularly in the theology of our particular faith, where we believe these children are coming from another place, from a premortal existence, if you will, and need to have an opportunity to come to this earth. Again, as we read these, we're not trying to imply anything. These are not loaded questions. We're not trying to suggest that one person knows all these answers. In fact, no people know very many of these answers. But we just think it's something to think about. So we're going to go fairly quickly.
Let me say before we start, too, that we know that many of you out there are worried about your children having children, your grandchildren having children. We are also. I mean, we're just not seeing these children come like they have done in the past.
And we also know there are many who wish to have children and are unable to.
Of course.
So it's a very individual thing. But we want to think about some of these questions. We'll go fairly quickly to give you a sense. And then again, at the end, we'll tell you where to find these if you want to go back and read over them. So I'll start, Linda will go, we'll alternate on these questions. What was the first commandment that God gave to man?
When Heavenly Father said, multiply and replenish the earth, was he talking to Adam and Eve or to all of us? And what do these five words mean today?
Multiply and replenish the earth. What do those five words mean? Do you find it ironic that increasing population seems to have ravished and depleted rather than replenished the natural world? Do the words multiply and the word replenish, do they complement each other or do they oppose each other?
Did zero population growth mantra of the 70s, 80s, and 90s make our world better or worse, more or less secure and enduring?
Are the recent birth rate declines in virtually all developed countries a solution or an exacerbation of the world's problems?
Theoretically, in what ways could fewer and fewer babies being born thwart or threaten God's plan for the mortal experience of all of his children?
Should President Dallin Oaks' statement, quote, our theology begins with heavenly parents, and our greatest aspiration is to be like them, end quote, have direct bearing on our desire to have children?
Are you alarmed that the fertility rate has fallen below replacement level in all 50 states and all the wealthiest countries of the world?
What are the ramifications of declining below replacement birth rates in rich developed countries and increasing above replacement birth rates in poor developing countries?
What's the economic worry of ever-increasing lifespans coupled with ever-decreasing birth rates? Does an inverted pyramid accurately diagram this dire economic situation?
How do fewer and fewer young people or workers support and maintain or even pay the Social Security and Medicare of more and more retired seniors and elderly?
Will countries with declining fertility rates have to rely more and more on immigration to maintain their workforces? And will that be good or a bad thing?
How much does having children affect and impact human capacity to love, to sacrifice, and to accept responsibility?
How important are the character lessons and love capacities learned and brought about by parenthood?
Does the trend toward having fewer children later in life fit well with our human biology? Does it fit with God's plan? Does it fit with the striving for a higher quality of parenting?
How much should our belief in a premortal existence influence our desire to have children? And how does that belief impact our perspective and influence how we view our eternal relationships with these spiritual siblings who become our children?
How much does God's desire for us to become more like him hinge on our becoming parents as he is a parent?
Does the promise of the opportunity of parenthood and progeny in post-mortality apply to those who consciously choose not to have children here as well as those who want to but cannot?
How closely is the declining marriage rate connected to the declining birth rate?
How important is mortal procreation in the fulfillment of God's plan and purpose and in his work and glory?
Which is the primary motivator to those who decide against having children? Is it really protecting the planet, or is it some idea of mutual individual freedom and not being constrained and being able to do more freely what they want with their money?
To expand the previous question, which reasons for having none or less or later children do you think actually influence people most?
Let me expand that one a little, because, you know, we don't have to speculate on what the birth rate's doing or the fertility rate. It's going down in all developed countries. The question is why? And when you ask people and when you do public opinion research and find that people want no children or one child, even if they have the capacity and the resources to have more, the question, of course, is why? And there are good reasons, but there are also perhaps reasons that aren't so good. And so if you were reading this question, it would be like a multiple choice. And the question is to expand that other question, what is the reason? Which the reasons for having none or less or later, and we haven't talked much about the later question, but the statistics are clear that people are waiting longer and longer to have children, and many people feel the ideal time is in your 30s, not in your 20s. And so all these questions of having none or less or later, what are the reasons? And it's like a multiple choice. Pick your top three. Avoid responsibility.
Preserve options and freedom.
Less depletion of the earth's resources.
Bad marriage or no marriage. Don't have someone with whom I would want to have kids.
We hear that a lot. I'd like to have kids, but I just haven't found anyone I'd like to have them with. Too expensive. I can't afford children.
Oh, the media really plays that one up. Like it costs $1 million to have a child. I mean, it's not that much, but it's excessive. It's ridiculous.
Better lifestyle for fewer people.
Not a natural parent. Couldn't be good at it.
Unable to conceive. That's
which
clearly
is very real,
a reason for many.
We've had a lot of experience with that one.
Yeah.
Which is so sad. Don't want to bring a child into this messed up world. There's
so
a lot of that.
There's a lot of discussion of why not to have children, or why to have a dog instead of a child, or why to, you know, be noble enough to not use any of the world's resources with the next generation in your family so that others can have more. There's just a lot of discussion, right? But some of these questions we're asking, to us at least, are spiritual. So here's the next one. Could there be any more direct way for the adversary to undermine God's plan and purpose for mortality than to prevent spirits from getting into mortality at all? Or to have them come to a place or a circumstances where they're less likely to live in freedom or less likely to discover spiritual truth?
Oh, wow. You know, we could debate this forever because there just is no right answer to any of these. But, and wow, we'd love to talk to you about it, as we keep saying. Should the macro of God's plan of salvation factor into the micro of a church couple's decision of whether and when to have children?
And here's the final question. Going back to the title of the article, is the primal commandment to multiply and replenish still in effect today? And we didn't mention the title of the article, but the title is Replenish. Such an interesting word, replenish. Can breaking the primal commandment disrupt the planet and the plan? We think these are serious questions. And again, and you're better at this than I am, Linda, but We're not preaching here, and we're not suggesting we have the answers, and we're not talking to young couples and saying you should have babies, you should have them faster, you should have more of them. Not at all. We're saying this is a sea change. This is the only time in the history of the world where people have the capacity and make the choice not to have children, or to limit to one child. And again, we're not saying that's a bad decision. That's an individual decision.
Well,
But the ramifications of it are manifesting themselves, and that may be the story of this century, the fact that population growth in the world has changed so drastically, and that you have countries in Africa that have a birth rate of six
children.
children per woman, and you have countries in Asia like Japan and like Korea and like Singapore, where schools are closing, where the workforce is in serious decline, where they're offering all kinds of incentives to have more children, and where they're bringing in people from the Philippines or people from Latin America just to fill the jobs that they have. And we're also not implying that that is a bad thing. Who knows if that bringing in of people from poor developed countries into rich developed countries is a good or a bad thing. I mean, we have plenty of debate in this country about immigration, but is it getting to the real issue of the fact that we have to have immigration because we're not having enough children to replace our population or to fill the
And fill the
workforce?
workforce, yeah. It's so sad in Japan, so many women are deciding just not to have children, not to get married or have children. It's too much responsibility. They are expected to stay home with their children, which is kind of nice, you know, that they want parents to be home with their children. But it just, these women are highly educated and they don't have any interest in just staying home with children with no option.
So let's return to where we began with sort of our own personal story on this, and let's just say that our generation is very different than our children's generation, and our children's generation is even more different than our grandchildren's generation with regard to what we're talking about here today. And the prevailing attitude that we hear, and there's a lot to be said for this, we're not being critical of this. It's the notion that, hey, let's really be careful to not overload ourselves here or overextend ourselves. Let's live within our means. Let's only have one or two children, because then we'll have a better chance of educating them well, of having enough money to give them a great life, and of being able to really, provide them for things that we perhaps didn't have. And you hear that a lot, and basically the bottom line is, even if we're going to have children, let's wait until we own a house, until we have a solid income, until we are able to provide everything that they need. And in the meantime, let's get ready for that, and let's enjoy our freedom until then. Let's do our traveling and live our lives without the encumbrance of children. And then just before we're biologically unable to have kids, let's have a couple, or at least one, so we have the experience of having a child. I guess all we would ask people to consider if they're in that situation is maybe it's funner with children. Maybe life can still be an adventure. In fact, maybe that is the real adventure of life. And maybe it's okay to have a child while you're still struggling a little bit. Maybe there's a way to move forward. Now, it ought to be a prayerful individual decision, but let's not have the default switch thrown toward the side of not having children until we're sure we can afford and support. Now, there needs to, again, even as I talk about it, you can know that I'm conflicted. I'm not saying
Well,
have children before you can support them. I'm just saying there's a lot of factors to weigh, and some of them are macro factors that will affect the entire world, the entire economy, the entire society.
And we have to say that some people have too many children. I mean,
That's
they really are
correct.
not capable of
That
taking
is
care of all those
absolutely
children.
correct.
And so it's just such a personal thing. But we really appreciate you hanging with us today, thinking about this topic. It's important. We don't have all the answers. We know you don't either, but thank you for joining us. And
If this interests you, Google Meridian Magazine this weekend or just go to LatterdaySaintMag.com and read about it. And what we're going to do next week is we're going to ask fewer questions and maybe suggest a couple of directions or a couple of thought processes that might alleviate the problem over time.
so, until then, thanks for joining us today on Ayers on the Road, and see you next time. Bye-bye.